Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you sun in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague, and I'm here with my remote studio at Tales of the Cocktail 2023 in beautiful, steamy, baking hot New Orleans, Louisiana. And I'm sitting down with a couple of friends of mine, Carl DeHoffman and Reagan Dowdy from Press Imports.
Price
Imports. I always mispronounce that. It's spelled funny. Or maybe I'm just funny. And we have been drinking. It's early morning on Monday, and we're already pretty deep into it.
We're a few drinks in.
I'm feeling pretty good about it, too.
Yeah. But as I said, we weren't really drinking. We were learning.
Educational drinking.
Drinking is an education. I always say there's no better place to get an education than at a bar, but I'm usually talking about like manners and things like that. You know, you can learn about the weather. You can learn a lot of stuff at a bar. Yeah. But we've been sitting here trying to sort of like unravel the problem that everything is about solutions, right?
Right.
So we've just been trying to kind of come to a solution for what's happening to us in the field, which is sad but true. It's just what it is. Can't fight what is. Chartreuse is becoming more and more difficult to purchase. That's happening for the consumer for sure, and has been for about 2 years now. And now I'm starting to feel it at my bar.
Yeah.
Just this past week, I was telling you guys off air, just this past week was the first time ever that I ordered a case of the yellow chartreuse and was told I could only order 3 bottles at a time.
It's wild.
Now, they told me I could order 3 bottles every day, but I can't order it by the case anymore. So this is getting real, right? Yeah. And so the solutions have to come about because these are things that we use in a lot of drinks. We have to figure out what alternatives exist. And you guys happen to have kind of quite a lineup, right? So we've been...
Well, yeah, because Price Imports specializes in, I always like to say, the bibs and bobs that the big companies don't think are worth messing around with. You know, the historical things, the family-run things, the... you know, unusual, tangential things that excite the hell out of certain people, and other people are just, you know, yet to be introduced to it. So that's the idea today.
Well, and I think that that's what, you know, drew me to the bar world, you know, pulled me out of the kitchen and put me behind the bar, is the notion that I think that I'll never learn it all. Yeah. I can absorb and absorb and absorb, and there's still a stream coming of things that I've not seen and have never seen. And that's for me, that's great. I always talk about Amaro as two Fs, right? It's either frustrating or fascinating. Mm. And the consumer, I think, is largely frustrated.
Yeah.
They want to put it in a box. They want to say, you know, this is XYZ and that is, you know, QRS. They can't stand the fact that no Amaro is similar to another Amaro. I think it's very frustrating for them. For me, it's fascinating. Yeah. And I think there's a sect of the consumer that's fascinated by it as well. But over by and large, I think that it's going to be one or the other. And I am in the class that says it's fascinating to me. So I'm excited to see new things. Yeah. And some of the things we tasted today, I've seen before, and some I have not. And I'm excited to see how they can play out in the bar world and make delicious drinks and educate the consumer.
Yeah, yeah. I think the dearth of chartreuse is actually going to open up a lot of people's palates to a lot more bitter profiles. I mean, just the fact that you taste Torella next to Shinterba, next to Izara, I think shows that there are a myriad of different blenders out there that are doing their own version of not only Alpine liqueurs, but we were talking about like Nova Salis, where they're like German liqueurs that are focused literally on like digestive qualities that come along with their liqueurs. But it's a fascinating, it almost feels like there's like a new horizon now.
I think with food and I think especially with these kinds of spirits, you have expressions of cultures from all over the world, right. and sort of a cultural heritage that comes down from different peoples and different practices. And they're like little anthropological, you know, experiences in a bottle. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're talking about frustrated or fascinating, you know, to me, each bottle opens a new horizon of cultural and like each bottle is a little wormhole where you could, if you follow it, you discover things about people and the way they've eaten and gone about things and their agricultural heritage and their, it's just endless. So it's, to me, it's endlessly fascinating.
Yeah. I think, you know, you just said a word that I use when I travel. I try and go when I'm traveling the world to the grocery store, because just walking up and down the aisles of a local grocery store in a foreign place to me is like an anthropological dig. Mm-hmm. You can really learn a lot about what people are on about if you see how they shop and how they eat.
Yeah.
And I think that that's obviously true. You know, we get to travel the world from our bar stool when we have a lot of things that have been, you know, brought to us from all over the world. And these things are all over the world. And I think that a lot of the flavor notes that we tasted today are a little bit polarizing to the typical American, right? The first round of drinks we had were with sort of what we would call the yellows, I guess. A lot of anise, right? Mm. Anise and licorice, I think, are a hard sell in America, differently than they are in the rest of the world, where they will drink them, you know, by the ounce on rocks, whereas we use them by the quarter to half ounce, and we hide them in cocktails to bring some nuance and some flavor. So let's talk about like maybe some of the marks that we tried this morning, starting with those yellows. Like one of the fascinating ones, the only one of the yellows that I had was the Stubenten, right? If I'm pronouncing that correctly. So let's talk about that one a little bit.
Yeah. Stubenten is created by Casa Turisti. It's made in the Yucatan. Really what Casa Turisti does is kind of focus on, again, bringing it back to the culinary world. A lot of the stuff that they make liqueurs out of are things that are prevalent in the things that they eat every day. So what they do essentially is go out and forage, for lack of a better word, on the peninsula. They find honey, dwarf coconuts, Seville oranges, soursop, which has become, I've never tasted something like a soursop. It's the most unique flavor profile I've come across. Mm-hmm. But the thing that we tried, Stubenten is a honey and anise liqueur. They're letting the honey ferment. They're adding green anise to it. It comes across much like a yellow chartreuse in the way that there's the honey available, or honey in the flavor profile. But this is like honey forward, finishes almost like an absinthe. And it's just really unique, really kind of expressive on like the flavors that Yucatecans have in their day-to-day life. It's just a fascinating liqueur. It's one of my favorite.
Yeah, this was one of the only ones up there that I had had before. And oddly, I had had it at the distillery. I was there at Casa Turisti because they make another thing that we were there. So it was sponsored by their Mark Kalani, which is a coconut liqueur. Mm. And they had that, and I bought a bottle and brought it back. Because I enjoyed it so much. It's a little bit lower proof, so it doesn't have that big, you know, alcohol hit. But it's got this really unique and somewhat complex flavor. And I think that comes from the fact that you just said, correct me if I'm wrong, that they ferment the honey.
It's fermented honey. Yeah.
Right. So it's almost like they're making miel first, right?
It's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Really delicious. And I think that we tasted it on its own, and then we made Joaquin Simo's Naked and Famous using it this morning. That's why we're all a little buzzed, because we made, I don't know, what, 7 drinks. But I think it played quite well. We all agreed that it was a bit a little sweet at the standard ratio, but that's the true measure, right? We have a standard by which we can make the drink, and then we can go back and pull levers and change it, right?
Yeah, I think that's the fun part about this industry, right? Coming from the kitchen where you get, like, you get to kind of make your version of a certain dish that you've probably either grew up with. We're talking about you growing up in Panama, so there, I'm assuming that seafood is a big part of
Panama City Beach, Florida, not Panama. Oh, but, sorry. But yes, but right on the Gulf Coast. So yeah, lots of seafood.
Yeah, cocktails are very much the same way, where you get to insert, take out, you make the cocktail your own. Again, like the exciting part about looking at a lineup of six different liqueurs is the endless possibilities you have because of the expressive qualities from Elixir d'Anvers to Casa de Risti. The world is literally your oyster.
So the Stubenten was not terribly far away from when the way it played in the cocktail. Mm. And it was an easy adjustment, I would imagine, to get it to a balance that the bartender would find happy for his customer base or her customer base.
Yeah.
Their customer base.
Yeah. And again, like, you know, educating yourself as a bartender is all part of the process. Yeah. And you have to educate your clientele. You know, I'll say it probably 1,000 times throughout this episode. We are the ones who taught people what chartreuse was, we, the bartenders. So now we may have to teach them other things, you know, which is great. That means that we're teaching ourselves something new. Teaching is learning. And that means that we're expanding our offerings to our, you know, typically pretty excitable and excited client base.
Yeah, I also like the idea that we've screwed up so much. We know the shortcuts in which to tell people how to actually drink. Like, I think that's 9 times out of 10, I spend so much time behind the bar making bad drinks to the point where you look at a liqueur like that, you make one drink, you understand, for lack of, like, you don't get the total understanding on the first drink, but by the time you make that second drink, you're like, all right, I'm going to dial this in. These people are going to understand the exceptional qualities behind what I find fascinating. So in turn of showcasing a product that you love, like, you're throwing that extension of yourself into the drink, that love that goes into
and that
drink.
Excitement, you know, that like, I'm charged up about this and I want to get you something delicious and get you charged up about it too.
I mean, I still dream. I'm on the sales side now, but I swear to you, like, I dream every day about that first drink that you push across the bar and someone goes, I love it. Can I have a second one?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that.
Can you jot down the specs for me?
Please. That kind of thing. Yeah. What do you call this? You know what I mean? And half the time you're like, I don't know. I just thought of this. Like, like, I need to serve 13 other people. Like,
yeah. We're at the beginning stages. We haven't got to the name yet.
It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun too, that a drink that features mezcal can be modified with a liqueur from across the peninsula made from a different part of Mexico that all expresses kind of a different culture, because, you know, Zapotec and, you know, Mayan cultures are expressed in those areas, I think, through the heritage. So it's not exactly the same. I would hate to say, but it's certainly a lot closer than France.
Well, yeah, if you think about the Naked and Famous, which is Joaquin's pretty direct riff on The Last Word, but kind of substituting a lot of the pieces, right? Mezcal instead of gin. Maraschino remains the same. Lime remains the same. But then Aperol getting off track.
No Maraschino.
There's no Maraschino, right.
Aperol instead of Maraschino.
Aperol instead of Maraschino. There we go. And then in our case today, instead of the yellow or jaune chartreuse, we're using these products that you brought. But if you look at his, it's kind of like trilateral, right? It's Italian, it's French, and it's Mexican.
Yeah.
Well, now we've boiled this down to just Mexican and
Italian.
But if we could find a red bitter from Mexico, then maybe we could build a more terroir-driven Naked and Famous that's mostly or entirely about Mexican products.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one way of thinking about it. Like, instead of having it be such a trip around the globe, to be a little bit more localized. And then you could start building Last Words.
Yes.
Or sorry, Naked and Famous's that are, you know, centered around one nation or one country, one, or one region or
yeah, right. One flavor profile. I think, you know, that's
the old, what grows together goes together.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the more that I'm kind of just adjacent to cocktails, the more that I see people are actually gearing towards like keeping, like, you know, I want to make a margarita fully Mexican, or it just seems like it belongs together. Like a Mexican red bitter makes so much sense based on the food quality or the taste profile of their food. Mm-hmm. You go to Italy and they talk about the complexity of Mexican food, which I honestly took for granted living in San Diego, moving to Ohio, just having like a good burrito. I didn't understand how hard it is just to make a good burrito.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost impossible for a lot, like for someone that's never been there, never understood the culture. And then you see you see mezcal, you see these beautiful mezcals from Oaxaca and around Mexico. It just kind of, the red bitter thing belongs.
Yeah, we need
to the Mexican. Someone palate. Needs to
throw up a flare and show me a red bitter from Mexico. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if there wasn't one.
There's got to be. Yeah. You know, that's the other thing. I think that we like to think that we live in such a global economy. But when it comes to, you know, consumables, spirits and foods alike, some things just don't get out of their region.
No.
You know, like, you know, at my shop, of course, in Mori Margo, we have hundreds of Amari, but there are thousands of Amari.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just don't get distributed to the United States.
Yeah, it's a lot like mezcal, where like every village has,
yeah,
there's sort dozens of mezcal. You go to Italy and everyone's like, I have a Campari. I mean, our only point of reference is Campari on this side. But you go over there and they're like, they're making bitters in their basement.
Yeah. Every town has.
Yeah.
As there, a lot of households are making their own things, right?
Yeah.
So these things are just never going to get out and about. So I would be willing to bet that there's a red bitter in Mexico that just there isn't here. And if we could get a hold of it, I bet we could make a really delicious, unique version of the Naked and Famous. We'd have to name it in Spanish, I guess.
speaking.
But yeah, so I think one of the coolest ones that we tasted today is the next one, which is Dutch, right? And you guys just got a hold of it, so it's new to you.
Belgium.
Yeah.
You guys just got a hold of it, so it's new to you, and it's brand new to me. I've never even seen this label.
Yeah.
And I thought it was delicious. Let's talk about
Elixir d'Anvers.
Thanks for jumping in on the pronunciation as I was about to stumble across it.
I'm sure it's wrong. But yeah, but yeah, it's a historical family-run distillery in Anvers, obviously, in Belgium. The recipe is closely guarded, so we don't have a lot of technical information other than we macerate herbs and spirit, distill it, and then macerate herbs and spirit and sweeten it, and like every other of the category. So you've got, it's a light, I guess, yellowish color for sure. It's, I guess, a little green tint to the yellow. Yeah, pretty clear, high clarity, very aromatic. And
it's something that it takes a left turn in like that yellow category. Like, I feel like yellow chartreuse, Strega would be the other one where it's like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah. Super, super like in that they occupy the same territory, which this is kind of leaning on like the earth spices, the cinnamons,
baking spices.
Yeah. It's a very different way to make a bitter liqueur. And something that I've not come across, to be honest with you. Yeah. That was kind of an eye opener when I tasted it first time.
That cola.
Right. That's what we talked about. How uniquely, I don't historically think of these lighter colored liqueurs or Amari as having those cola notes. And this one has that. It even has, we all picked out a bit of like gingerbread, not necessarily the sort of spicy part of ginger, but the sort of like baking spicy part of ginger.
Exactly. The bready part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed this one, both on its own and in the Naked and Famous variation that we made. And I think this one in particular has a lot of legs for me.
Yeah, I was actually really intrigued. You were talking about possibly making like a long drink with it. Mm-hmm. I would love to see on, like, we just have a tiny bottle here. I think it's the only bottle that we've been.
Yeah, it's 200 ml. It's
all the rest of the bottles are in a container going across the ocean right now.
I would love to see what that would do with soda water, just because I feel like half new. I mean, that was like the trick back in the day. It was like ketchup kind of screwed this drink up. If I just throw soda water on it, like, how's it work out? Like,
right. Yeah. So just give it a little length, you know, give it some effervescence.
Exactly. So I would love to see when you add water or soda water to it, how it expresses itself, because I've not seen this bottle even until today.
Right. Well, even when you shook up the Naked and Famous for us, I mentioned afterwards that it would be probably pretty tasty if we did a Regal shake, right? Which is where you put the twist of a citrus into your shaker, but instead of a twist, just a little knob of ginger, right? That would brighten up that ginger aspect that it kind of already has, and bring another layer of flavor to the cocktail. But again, that's us. I think the bartender's nature is to take something and make it my own in some way, right? Yeah. So I'm taking Joaquin's drink and using a different liqueur and then shaking in a piece of ginger. And now I can call it the famously naked or something, you know? I find this one of the ones we tasted today was the most sort of intriguing to me.
Right. Yeah. It's mysterious in like the greatest of ways possible. Like I would never think that something from Belgium would be featuring ginger. Like that's, to me, like when I associate ginger, that's very much in like Chinese food, South Asian stuff.
Yeah.
The fact that the Belgians are using this flavor component in a bitter is absolutely fascinating.
But I mean, this is just us guessing, right? They're not telling us what's in
there. Yeah, yeah.
So this could simply be an amalgam of the different flavors that are in there that are coming off as ginger.
Yeah, the brain understands it as ginger, but there's no ginger actually in.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah. This is the coolest. I agree with you, especially like after I sell these things for a living. It's very rare when I taste something and I go, there's endless applications for this.
This is definitely a unique one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move down the line here to the Izara. Mm-hmm. And this one, tell me all about it, Carl.
Izara, it comes from the Basque region of France. And it's a historical liqueur going back to the 1800s that was first commercially bottled in like 1905. It went on to become a million bottle a year bestseller for quite a while, and then has, you know, since gone into obscurity a little bit, and we're now importing it. It's produced in France still, and we have a little more information about this technically. We know they use around 17 plus herbs. There's multiple macerations. There's the herbal maceration. There's a secondary maceration with a different component with green walnuts and then walnut husks. Mm-hmm. And then a third maceration, which is about prunes. The herbal maceration is distilled. And then all three macerations are blended. For the yellow, they're blended with honey to finish it up.
I mean, this one was equally fascinating to me because, again, it's bright. You know, everybody knows I'm colorblind, but it's brightly colored yellow. But it had this like forest floor, brown dried leaves quality to it that's coming from that walnut situation. And then, a latent fruitiness from prunes, which is shocking. Again, I don't think prune and yellow, you know.
I'm thinking,
prunes are going to be in my Unicum plum, right?
Right.
It's dark and rich, but so this has like some real interesting, fun, unique qualities that brought, again, another angle to the cocktail that we made, right?
Yeah, and I think it's the interesting aspect I found is how it's not terribly sweet. So in the cocktail, the flavor profile was compelling. And it left a lot of room for different avenues of sweetening, perhaps.
Yeah, I think this one was the initial one that Carl and I tasted along with Henry. It was like, wait, there's different. You're putting prunes?
Yeah.
Like what? Like walnuts? Yeah. Like I think this was an eye opener for me in this category where it's like the Basque region.
Prunes and walnuts and honey. Give me a cheese plate.
Yeah, exactly. And it came off tasting. you know, it, there's a bitterness to it, it, just in the same way as yellow chartreuse. But like, that was one where it's like complete, like, all right, reshift the way that, like, I think the world works. I think this was the one that kind of, I'm glad I tasted this. And then the Don Vares behind it, where it's like, all right, like endless possibilities mm-hmm. in this category.
It's also a great example of the cultural anthropology, because Azara has some really fun stories about it. You know, it's featured in The Sun Also Rises in a scene where, you know, the lead character is drinking at a cafe in the Basque region, and he's offered a glass. And mm-hmm. so it has, like, you know, and it also was featured in a celebritant cocktail competition in Paris by this actress who created the cocktail. And she was a bit of a, you know, star who created all kinds of, you know, she was, I guess, like a sex symbol of sure. her day. And she made this cocktail that became famous using Azara. So there's a kind of, you know, there's a cool cultural angle to the artifact of this bottle.
Celebrity endorsed without the tequila part.
Beyond. Yeah. 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 And, I guess the Frankie Marshall did a nice article about the cocktail, because it featured Armagnac, you know, mm-hmm. and she does the work with the Armagnac.
Of course. Yeah.
So she did a whole article about it. And, so I think, to me, that is always interesting when you can, you know, because the only thing, you know, the three big components of a great bar is, like, you know, the environment, you know, the hospitality, the drinks, and then the storytelling. So, like, if you can have all three wrapped up in one bottle, then that's, like,
yeah,
always a plus.
Well, I always tell my teams at all my bars, I don't expect you to know everything about every bottle. What I expect, though, is that you know three things about every bottle. If you know one thing about every bottle on your back bar, and especially a back bar like Amore Margo, yeah. you know more than most people.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
If I mean, you know two things, yeah. you know more than almost everyone. Right. And if you know three things, you are expert level.
Yes.
Right? So, yeah, that if there's stories to be told, I like to have my team have access to those.
Yeah.
Right? I need you to know, you know, some flavor notes. I need you to know where it's from. I need you to know a story like that.
Maybe yeah, a fun story like that really brings yeah. another level of experience to the drink.
Yeah, the elevator pitch, I think, is the yeah. most important part of bartending, right? Like, if you're bouncing between, even your bar is famously small.
Yeah.
But
it's pretty small.
But
it's growing.
You need to be able to format your time and your style of bartending to a bar like that, where everybody's looking for that experience, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, that elevator pitch, the storytelling, the quick story, who endorsed it, why it's famous, what's it go with, and why I love this. Mm-hmm. I think that endears people. That's always going to bring people back to your bar. I think it's the most important part, is you have a product to sell, which is essentially yourself and your relationship to the product that you're pouring. Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that the guest feels a sense of, not that they were educated by being here, mm-hmm. but that they were edified in some way.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want you to walk out of here being like, I just learned algebra. I want you to walk out of here going like, I picked up some stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I feel better about my choices now. I feel like I have something to say to my guests at my cocktail party or at some other cocktail party. I will feel smarter and more, you know, engaging and
yeah, know. I think that's the most important part, yeah. right?
New horizons
all the time in this industry, and showing people that effectively is what makes. I think that's, like, the big part about New York. Growing up on the West Coast, you hear all the time about, like, the service industry and the hospitality of New York City, and I think that's ingrained now in the culture as a whole. I don't think anybody's just pouring drinks, unless you're at, like, a club or something. But mm-hmm. you don't go to a cocktail bar without kind of gleaning some sort of weird fact about something that you're drinking.
Absolutely. If you want to.
There's
the flip of that is, you know, I make sure that myself and my teams read our guests in such a way to understand what they're here for. Mm-hmm. If they're here for me to tell them about every component of their drink, mm-hmm. I'm here to do that.
Right.
If they are here to have me sit the drink down and walk away, I'm a ghost.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'd made the same thing in Cleveland when I became a shot girl for a tequila that we have.
Why don't you grab that one since I nearly knocked the whole thing over?
Probably Zara Green now, right?
Yeah, there we go. That's what we should talk about. So then we're moving into some green stuff. Because, you know, as it turns out, chartreuse yellow and chartreuse green are both going to be, you know, absentee. Mm-hmm. So you've brought a whole host of both yellows and greens. And again, I'm colorblind, so I don't really care, but I get it. You know, how I generally refer to chartreuse to the layperson is, you know, yellow is all about the flowers and green is all about the grass.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So let's talk about the Azara, same mark that we just talked about, but this is their green version. It's slightly higher, right? 38 versus 40, is that correct? Mm. No, they're both 40.
They're both 40.
They're both 40.
And they're made the same way for the first... up until the point where they blend it. And then instead of putting in honey for the green, they put in sugar and some Armagnac. Mm-hmm. So,
well, right. That was the fascinating part about this one. It's the spirit is blended with Armagnac.
Yeah. And also then they do a second maceration for the color. Mm-hmm. So the color is derived from, you know, a second maceration after distillation. Whereas for the yellow, it doesn't have that. It gets the honey and there you go. Right. And all the macerations give the color. So it's, you know, same idea, initial maceration, distillation, a second, you know, two other macerations, one with the green walnut, one with the prunes, all blended together, sweetened with sugar, and then Armagnac to finish. And that other herbal maceration to give the color.
Right. And since it's the first one that switches gears, we also then switched cocktails. We moved away from the Naked and Famous and into, of course, the Last Word.
Mm. Right?
So this is not the Last Word. We're going to say that a bunch of times.
Right.
But first, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors on Heritage Radio Network. Again, you're listening to The Speakeasy live from the future at Tales of the Cocktail 2023. Stand by.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm in the mobile studio in New Orleans at Tales of the Cocktail 2023 with Carl DeHoffman and Reagan Dowdy from Price Imports.
Price Imports.
It's spelled press.
Yeah.
The way you should think about it is that everything we sell is not sold on Price. Mm.
All right.
From Price.
Yeah. All right. It's from Price. Got it. Well, listen, you were mixing up the drinks today. You made us all them versions of the Naked and Famous, and now we shifted gears, and now we're making versions of Last Word. So let's talk about how the Azara did in the first of the last words that you made us, the first of the last.
I think the botanicals lived through. The only caveat is adding sugar is probably... That's probably the only drawback, I would say. I would say it serves as this, like, it's serviceable for the flavor, like the profile of chartreuse when it comes to the botanicals and the flavor. I think it stood out that way through the cocktail. Adding sugar, adding maybe a quarter ounce of simple, I think is really all you need.
Yeah, just something to kind of round it out and give it a little softer mouthfeel.
The balance is not very far away.
No.
I was kind of surprised with that because there is a big part of the green Azara was the spearmint.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that gummy kind of quality, that spearmint that everybody kind of equates to, that spearmint.
Sounds like our neighbor has whipped out his leaf blower.
Yeah, and not during the yellow chartreuse when it was appropriate.
Yeah.
Holy smoke, he's right on top of us.
This guy loves his job.
Is it his job or is he like just Hank Hill?
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, the proof is lower than the 110 of chartreuse. It's 80 proof.
Yeah.
But still,
I don't think you need to use like a navy strength gin or anything to make up for that. That was like the kind of the cool part about that. Flavor's there. It just needs the sweetness.
Yeah, just needed to be rounded out a bit.
So I think a lot of the great part about chartreuse is it actually helps proof the cocktail. Tank Hill, he's getting extra deep.
Yeah, he's getting right up next to us. Let's pause for 1 second. Can you see him? Like, is he about to come up between us here, the little alleyway between the houses?
Do you mind if I use the restroom?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, let's give him a second to maybe at least move a little further away.
He's like, I see that one leaf, and I gotta get it out.
Jerk.
Yeah. Like, he knows what's going on.
Is he right in front of us?
All right.
We're just like 10 minutes away.
Yeah, that guy is the sweetest guy ever. He was just there doing all his landscaping. And I was like, you don't have to do it today. He's like, I don't. I'm like, no, just don't worry about today. He's like, oh, thank you. I'm going to go home.
Oh, nice. Fuck yeah.
Like, fuck yeah. Gave him a day off and saved our podcast. But he was indeed about to go up that alleyway and take care of the backyard. Yeah, I just told him that he didn't have to do it today. He could go home. He was very grateful.
Oh, good. I mean, was that for all of us? Because they're setting up.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Ay, ay, ay. Carl told him to fuck off.
Please fucking go away. There's nothing better when you do your job so well, people tell you to go home.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Do you listen to any new punk? Or is it like...
I'm kind of stuck in my old ways. You know, I listen to like...
Yeah.
MC5 and fucking Slapshot and Agent Orange and
Bad Brains and
Bad stuff Brains like, yeah. And fucking, you know, tons of Minor Threat and
Dude, Minor Threat is sweet too.
Fugazi.
Yeah.
And,
you know, yeah. Descendants. You
know, Descendants for sure. Yeah. Kind of getting off topic a little bit, but I listened to some old Replacements.
Yeah.
Like I saw the Replacements 3 nights in a row in Chicago, and all 3 nights in the fucking crowd was George Wendt.
No way. You know that is?
It's fucking Norm from Cheers. Yeah, all 3 nights. I was like, what's up, Norm?
I mean, Norm becomes so much more of an icon. The fact that on his off time, not only is he the drunk at the bar, he's showing up to punk shows for his favorite bands every night.
3 nights. It was a 3-night show. I was there for all 3 nights and he was too.
Putting in a shift, an absolute shift.
Yeah.
At the venue.
Yeah, the Aragon Ballroom, aka the Aragon Brawl Room.
Yeah, yeah. Infamous. Infamous. Aragon is crazy.
All right, let's get back to it, team.
Yep.
We got 10-ish minutes left on the clock for the podcast itself.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to mention something so it doesn't sound so weird. Mm. And we're back again. We took a quick break to let our guy with the... What was that?
Leaf blower.
It was a leaf blower, yeah. The motorized one, not even the electric one.
He was, in fact, Hank Hill.
He was, in fact, Hank Hill. We took a moment to offer him the day off today, and he was grateful for it. So
he was.
We got our studio sound back to at least somewhat normal. So we were talking about mixing up last words, and we just finished talking about the Izara. Mm-hmm. And now, do they have a different name? They both just say Izara.
They say Vert and yellow.
Marque Dupes Basque, yeah.
Well, no, they both say that too.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a green and a yellow. So we made the Naked and Famous with the yellow, and we made the last word with the green. Mm. And then we moved on
to Torello.
Enrico Toro.
Yeah.
Which is an Abruzzi producer of herbal macerations and of I think just extraordinarily quality. They're just gorgeous.
The idea that they go out into these rocky hillsides and basically just pull anise, fennel, again, gentian is the big one.
Right. This was the first one where I was like, oh yeah, I'm getting the bitterness.
Yeah.
72 right? different herbs going to the maceration.
Yeah. And they did the most Italian thing possible. It's, I know what you got. I'm going to throw oregano on this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, two of the most Italian things. They it's plenty of oregano in here. Mm. And then also the bottle is wrapped in wicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna market this the way that we know how to.
With red, green, and white.
Exactly.
Yeah. Full on. I mean, this could easily be, if it wasn't clear glass, this could easily be full of tomato sauce. Yeah.
Or a soccer jersey.
Right? Like, it looks like a tomato sauce can.
I feel like this is what, like, Del Piero, like, drank after he scores a goal. He just goes to the sideline, takes a shot at Torella, and goes, I'm going to go play the next 45 minutes.
There you go.
Right. Like, yeah, it's an exceptional Alpine liqueur.
And we're tasting two from Enrico Toro, right? Because the next is the Centurba. Yeah. And so if you consider them next to each other, it's probably educational. The Torella is lower proof. Mm-hmm. What is it, 38%?
38.
And it's sweetened with honey. Mm. And the Centurba is 70%.
70%.
Yes.
And it has
140 fruit.
Straight fire water.
And in order to make sure that you are aware of that proof, they do not add any sugar at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Just herbs.
It is bone dry and fiery hot and ferociously herbaceous.
Yeah.
But let's back up to the Torello first. So it's Enrique Toro, and the mark is called Torello 72,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
This one, for me, was the first one where bitterness started to shine through, mm-hmm. Which, of course, I'm always looking for. My palate is always searching for bitter.
Absolutely.
And then, again, really stacked high with oregano as sort of definitely the aroma and the opening flavor notes. But then because the oregano, is like a woody herb, a lot of woodiness too. So it had this, like, even though there is some sweetener in this one you mentioned, it's very kind of like almost tannic from the woodsy part of the oregano.
A lot like their hillsides. It's like rustic. Yeah. It tastes rustic. And I think wholly authentic to like the Italian flavor profile. Everything that you have in Italy, there's some sort of balance there. It's robust. It's bitter. It's sweet. Torella fits all, or checks all the boxes of the complexity of the Italian kind of culinary side, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of culinary, I think Carl said off air, this would be like a great, pouring an ounce into a pan of, shallots and mussels and chili flakes and finishing it with a bit of this would be really, really delightful.
Oh, well, God, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things.
So in this one, for me, you made a last word for us with this one. And it, again, it had that bitterness I was looking for, but maybe not the same herbaceous qualities, but still quite herbaceous. And like, I think what we learned the most is that none of these didn't work. I think that we also learned that they could all use a little work, right? There's some lever pulling to be done, but we just went with straight ratio of the classic cocktails, the modern one and the classic that we know, so that we'd have a control for our session today.
Right.
And I think that was exemplified. Well, we got one more to talk about, but then we have a lever pull that we did that kind of went a little bit off the track.
Yeah, we got fun with it, yeah.
So the last one, also made by Enrique Toro, is Centurba, which means, 100 herbs?
Mm.
That's what it means.
So, yeah.
But it Could still be. Says 72.
Yeah, it's 72 herbs. Different proofs, no sugar added. So this is like the stuff that you would think that like Italian farmers would drink on the hillside. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it is.
Medicine.
It is straight up
medicine.
One of the medicinal things that you've tasted, but yeah. something that is like, it warms your heart. It warms your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want more.
Yeah. I mean, it was very chest warming.
Yeah.
It was very like bursts of, you know, a myriad of herbs led, of course, by oregano. Mm-hmm. And like, this is the kind of thing that I think like how in general herbal liqueurs and Amari started.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very much out of necessity at first, right? So you're saying to yourself, yeah, I'm a farmer and I've got all these things and I'm harvesting them faster than I can consume them and they're going to go bad because winter is coming,
right.
as the kids were so keen on saying a few years ago. And so we're going to lose that nutritive quality that we need, right? We need the nutrition. We need the calories from this thing that we've, you know, exercised some calories to produce. So how do you save it? Well, you put it in booze.
Yeah.
And then we can have that later in the wintertime when we need those calories, we can still access them.
Yeah.
So I think that this is an example to me of how, you know, ingenuity and necessity drove the creation of these things.
Absolutely.
One of the things that you said about this Southern that struck me is that it had a palate presence that was sort of like a Szechuan pepper that had that. Like,
oh yeah, it tingled on my lips, my tongue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You could, the herbal magic, whatever it is, all those compounds, that
sensory experience that had, comes along with it.
Yeah,
it wasn't just the ABV. I've drank things that are this hot or hotter.
Oh, no.
And those will certainly make your tongue tingle too.
I mean, it was
but
warming.
This was a very specific feeling.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. It's warming, but it didn't assault you with alcohol in any way, because the herbs, like, I think, take over.
Yeah, and again, these guys are pretty protective. They call it a proprietary blend, whatever that means. I enjoy what they do. It's almost nice not knowing, because I want to believe that they throw like white pepper in there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It like has a bit of peppery at the back.
Yeah. So like I actually really enjoy the fact they are doing the same, like it's the same idea with every bitter liqueur. I don't want you to know what I do, because I don't want you stealing it.
Yeah, we talk about this ad nauseum at the shop. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, I don't have the time to replicate this, let alone come up with a green liqueur that
I'm not going out foraging for 72 herbs.
Dude, I'm not going into the hillsides for this.
I'm not even
going to
sit around on the internet and try and find those 72 herbs. I know I'll just buy the bottle. You already made it, I'm buying it.
I live in Ohio. I make dandelion tea. That's the effort that I'm putting in. But the idea that there might be that peppercorn that tingles your gums and makes it a full sensory thing, I think that is what sets Chinterba apart from most other bitter liqueurs. I really believe that.
And then you did the...
we made the last word with this.
Yeah.
And it was, I think we all agreed, a bit hot and a bit tart.
Yeah, definitely.
Not so enough dry. Sweetness in there.
Yeah.
So the lime stood forward quite a bit, but with plenty, plenty of herbs. And again, some lever pulling there, add a bit of sugar, bring the ratios into a little bit more focus by lowering the quotient of this product against everything else, maybe bring the gin up. You know, there are plenty of ways to pull some levers and make this drink a little bit more closer to the target we're shooting at. Mm-hmm. And one of them was, frankly, to mix the two from Enrique Toro, right? Which is what you did for the last one.
Yeah.
The last word that we had.
Yeah. It's two parts Torella, one part Chinterba, and I think you get pretty much exactly what chartreuse is, that bitter quality, the woodiness. You still get the anise, the fennel. But what you tasted the last word with that. I would say that's
pretty close.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, very much so.
The oregano.
With that oregano pop, yeah.
Like popped somehow less when the two were combined for some reason.
Yeah.
But it was still there.
They balance out. And I don't know if that's on purpose, because I did this at BCB. Like literally, like I was talking to Eric Castro about this and just dumped, I think I dumped like a half ounce of the Torella. And he's like, yeah, well, it's chartreuse. I was like, it needs proofing. And just dumped a little, like a skosh in there. And I was like, this tastes like chartreuse. And I was like, by accident, like just like every other bar story that's like legendary, by accident,
discover this. We can probably at least lay some of the blame on Eric for the depletion of chartreuse with the damn Pina Verde.
Pina Verde, yeah.
You know, and then Marco with the freaking chartreuse swizzle out there, like my using it by the multi ounces.
It is my favorite drink. Chartreuse swizzle, I think, is like one of the most perfect drinks that I've ever tasted in my entire life. I used to make it with ube, like an ube kind of like coconut thing. And it was like, dude.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I have a drink on the menu at Eteria, one of my spots, where I'm literally just pointing at Eric and making fun of him. And it's it's called the yellow pineapple, right? Because piña verde just means green pineapple.
Yeah.
So I made a drink with yellow and mezcal and tequila, and it's basically the same build, and I just called it the yellow pineapple.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
There you go, Eric. Yeah. We'll deplete them both. And we did. Yeah. And, you know, that's you know, in its way, of course, it's a bummer. Yeah. But what that does is that releases us from the sort of chains that bind us to any single product and gives us the opportunity to look around the back bar and around the world to fill that back bar with unique and new products like these that you guys are bringing to us. And I think it's great.
I thoroughly appreciate the platform you gave us to talk about this, because this is, it's
a very fun conversation.
Yeah. And I think this is only going to grow. Like we were talking about off air. It's going to be more like wine. You're going to have these bitters from around the world, you know, not just Europe, but there's going to be these, you know, Asian, Mexican, South American stuff. So you're going to get terroir and bitterness that has like a cultural relevancy, just like wine does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm very excited to see where that goes.
Yeah. So am I. Yeah. Well, guys, if anybody wanted to get a hold of you and get some tastes on their bar or what have you, how can we reach out to you the most easily? Got an Instagram account you want to pimp or?
Oh, yeah.
Give everybody your direct phone number, Carl?
Yeah. Just, I mean, you can email me at carl@priceimports.com, which is P-R-E-I-S-S, imports.com, and Carl with a K.
Yeah.
That's probably the easiest way.
Yeah.
And I'm in the Northeast.
My Instagram is rumrunnerreagan. I love alliteration. also, reagan@priceimports.com. I'm based in the Midwest, also, strangely, Oklahoma. But you DM me.
Yeah.
Just DM me.
Right on.
Yeah.
I think that's the way people get in touch with everybody these days.
Half the business I get now is DMing. Yeah. Yeah.
At least it starts the conversation. It's a firewall, I think.
Yeah.
If you can't DM me first, then you don't deserve my email, right, or my phone number.
Exactly.
Well, all right. We got to taste through some really cool stuff. We got to drink a bunch of Naked and Famous and a bunch of Last Words, and we came to the conclusion of the last word is that it's malleable, it's changeable, and we're going to have to adapt because we can't get a hold of the product that it originally calls for, and that's not a problem.
It won't be a problem in the future.
It's potentially an opportunity.
Yeah. I think it really is. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of The Speakeasy, coming to you live from the future in New Orleans, Louisiana at Tales of the Cocktail 2023, hanging out at the Price Imports House down here on Elysian. We've had a great morning tasting through all of these marks, and I encourage you to go out and take a look and see if any of them fit in your program at your bar. So cheers, everybody. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Cheers to you.
Cheers, guys. So you don't shun
the devil with your... The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.